Welcome to EAA Radio. I'm Wireless Mike.
And I'm Matthew. And for this segment today, we are joined by Darren Smedsmoen. Darren joins us with a very interesting and unique story. Darren, welcome.
Good afternoon, guys.
So I heard you might have had a little bit of an emergency with your airplane. Can you tell us about what happened and how you handled it?
Yeah, back in October last year, I was heading down to Bemidji from my home in Roseau, down to my first IFR training session, and about 20 minutes out, over 2,500 feet over Lower Red Lake, my engine seized up, and thankfully, I was within coasting distance of land. I set up an approach to Highway 89 there, and 2.5 minutes, I was on the ground, unharmed, and the airplane was just fine as well.
Yeah, so, great story. Great story.
Happy ending.
Everything happened. It went great. Then what happened?
Then the tribal police showed up on the scene, and we got the airplane off the road, got traffic passing, and all was well. They left the scene. I talked to my wife, told her I was fine. Since I was fine, she was fine. I talked to my flight instructor. I said, I'm not going to be making it today, unfortunately. And then I called AOPA and said, hey, I just had an emergency landing. I'm fine. Plane's fine. Just an FYI. Everybody left the scene. I was there. I was going to wait with my plane until I'd arranged an A&P to come and get the plane, take it apart. And sitting in the cockpit, it was 45 degrees, nice fall day for Roseau, sitting up there, filling out my logbook, and the tribal police came back to the scene and said, I got bad news for you. We're seizing the plane.
And why? What was their justification?
He gave me a ticket at the time for an airspace infraction. They claim the airspace up to 20,000 feet. It's a resolution from back in 1978, a tribal resolution that is non-published, non-public, so there's no way that anybody, including me, could have known about.
Now, did you even know you were over tribal land at the time?
Oh, yeah. I've driven through that area many times. I've driven on that road many times.
Okay, but only because you're familiar with the area.
Oh, right. It's not marked on the sectional, not on the NOTAMs. It's just like any other air over the United States.
Would it be even practical to be on the charts? Is it a continuous area? How would we know?
Well, I call it the contiguous Red Lake Nation. That's a big chunk. But okay. Also across northern Minnesota, there are hundreds, maybe thousands, of little chunks. 80s, 160s, all over northern Minnesota.
So
it'd be impossible to fly without going over their land.
And also, what is the legal justification for the airspace? Who actually owns that?
Well, of course, we know as pilots, the FAA controls all the airspace over the United States.
So this didn't seem to be going in a great direction, and but fortunately you called AOPA.
Yeah, so the cop left, and they were making their arrangements. Of course, at that time, I had nothing to say or do. I'm a man without a country, basically, because I'm on the Red Lake Indian Reservation. Now I realize they have no criminal jurisdiction over me. They do have the civil jurisdiction, so they couldn't throw me in jail. And of course, they didn't ever charge me with something like something bad. So they had civil jurisdiction, not criminal jurisdiction. I didn't know what they were doing, but I knew that they were seizing it. I had talked to an A&P. That it was going to take it apart and haul it away. And then I talked to him, told him what was up. He wanted nothing to do with it at that point. Mm-hmm. So they brought a trailer in. That wasn't going to work. They brought a tow truck in. That wasn't going to work. And I was out of the loop then. I didn't know what they were going to do. They eventually got a big roll-off truck, like was over at the booth here, loaded the whole thing on, 33 feet wide, and eventually made their way into town. And I was in the squad car behind the procession.
And then there was a big, you know, how do you get your airplane back? And you went to AOPA, and how were they able to help you?
Well, they've advocated for me since the very beginning. I just can't say enough. Right away, I had a court date of November 3rd. And so that was a couple weeks out. And I called lots and lots of lawyers. I probably talked to 24 lawyers. And of course, almost all of them couldn't practice on Red Lake. And the others didn't want to. And so at that point, I was ready to defend myself in tribal court. Well, then one of the lawyers that I talked to said, "You've got an ace in the hole here. The media doesn't know about this. Since I didn't bleed, the story didn't lead." Mm. Now, pilots knew about it because it did hit pilot press before then. And of course, the tribes knew about it. But the general public didn't. So whether I went to the press or they came to me, and both happened, it went, what do you say?
Viral.
Viral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It went viral. It went cross country, all across the world. And it was at that point that the tribe reached out to me on Halloween, October 31st, and said, "Court is off. Wait for something in the mail." Now, they had 45 days due process to charge me with something or whatever it was. The other thing that they did on Friday the 31st was said, "Take that original ticket and tear it up." Mm. So in our legal system, if I get caught speeding, go to court, I can't get charged with beating my wife or something like that. That's not how our legal system works. But
right.
They told me to wait and I'll get something in the mail. I never got anything in the mail. So what was I supposed to do? They sent out some press releases. The next press release said, of course, it wasn't airspace related at that time. At that point, they said that I was a threat to their people and their resources. Now, for me to be a threat to you, you have to be in my presence, right?
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
If I'm swinging a sword in my backyard all by myself, I'm not no threat. So I landed on a desolate highway. Nobody was there. I wasn't a threat to anybody, and I wasn't a threat to their resources. I didn't hurt a bug or a blade of grass.
And you actually did the safest thing by not crashing.
Right.
I mean, you did everything right.
I had either the lake, which I was over, the swamp, or the highway. You've been on the road.
Yeah. If you're not familiar with northern Minnesota, there's some very barren areas.
It
up
is
there.
Desolate country. I just went over probably 30 miles of swamp.
Yeah. So the fact that you were over the road at that time was a little saving grace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about how AOPA helped you get to a successful resolution. What happened after that that led towards where we are today?
Well, here's a kind of the goofy situation was the government was in government shutdown at the time. Mm. So I maybe talked to... I've talked to a few FAA people through the process, but for the most part, AOPA was doing my advocating at the highest levels. Mm. And of course, they wrote a couple letters to Duffy and to Burgum, Department of Interior and Department of Transportation. But they were doing all the advocating on the highest levels. And I say it's kind of like God is always working behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. The FAA was, and the other organizations, were working behind the scenes, even when it didn't look like it.
Mm. So, real quick, did any other Indian, because there's lots of Indian tribes, and I think that's something that we have to be, make sure that's clear, that this is one Indian tribe, and there are lots of other Indian tribes. Were the other Indian tribes supporting this position?
Not to my knowledge. Now, I haven't really communicated with many other than John Harrington, the NASA astronaut. And he's a pilot, astronaut, da da da. He thinks that this is silly. And I just think up in Alaska or wherever else, without airplanes, the Indians would have a tough time up there.
Right. And they use the airplanes for med flights and other things.
Oh, right. Yeah, that right after this happened and it came out that they are claiming the airspace, the medevac helicopters that service that area were like, we're out unless you make a carve out for us. Mm-hmm. So they did. So there's the medevac helicopters, but there's also firefighting helicopters. Now, I've talked to them personally, and so they can land on the reservation, but if they're coming up to Roseau, they're going around it, mm-hmm. as of now. That's, now, that's costing money, and it could be costing lives.
And safety.
Yeah. Well, we do appreciate coming in and sharing a story. It's very interesting. It's something I never would have even thought about flying, and I have flown over this area. Yeah. And hopefully your bad luck on this, or good luck for a safe landing, can help us come to a resolution in all of that. Again, we've been talking to Darren Simoto, and you're listening to EAA Radio.